Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Jake Litarski, joined today by John Litterin. It's been a while, but we'll be happy to be back with you here. Today, we're going to be making our fantasy picks for the biggest fights at UFC 222 live from Las Vegas on Saturday. Real quick, if you're on Twitter, you can give John a follow at John Litterin. I'll spell that out for you, at JonLitterine. You can follow me at JakeSki52. John, we skipped a couple, but we're back at it. It feels great to be back. I mean, since the last time we talked in December here, I was thinking that the biggest story is probably Stipe Miocic pulling the upset. He was the underdog when he was the champion, pulling the upset against Francis Ngannou and doing so in dominating fashion here. He's going to fight DC in July here. How long do you think he can keep it up?
Well, I guess, you know, the common answer is, you know, probably 50-50 if he can keep it up past July. The Ngannou fight, we learned that Stipe Miocic is an all-around mixed martial artist that's capable of fighting for 25 minutes. He took everything Ngannou had threw at him early. You know, he absorbed a couple shots, but, you know, he hung in there, and obviously Ngannou's cardio betrayed him, and Stipe was able to keep it up for 25 minutes and, like you said, cruise to the easy win. But, you know, the fight with Cormier is going to be, you know, something entirely different. Cormier is not going to gas out. Stipe is obviously going to have a big size advantage, but, you know, he hasn't faced a wrestler, you know, of DC's caliber. So that's obviously a few months away, but it's easy to see why the UFC, you know, decided to go that route, especially with now that Ngannou lost, obviously no clear cut contender in the division, really.
Yeah, exactly. Stipe beating most of the top contenders already. The light heavyweight division shallow. It all makes sense. You know, I'm looking at best fight odds right now. They're way out ahead on this. They've got Stipe as a -185 to -205 favorite. So something to think about moving forward. But John, let's shift the focus to this Saturday. We've got a pretty interesting card. I mean, I noticed DraftKings has got a 16,000 person tournament. It's a $10 GPP. They're paying out $25,000 to the top prize, and I know that those tend to typically split, especially when you're in such a large field GPP. But they're going all out as they typically do for the pay per views. And the biggest question, John, that fantasy owners are going to have to decide, whether it's that GPP or other cash games, is whether or not to use Chris Cyborg, because this is a Chris Cyborg headlined card here. We've got Cyborg at $9,700. She's also about a minus 1,600 favorite. She's going against Yana Kunitskaya, who is an Invicta champion moving over. They're starting to run out of fighters for Cyborg already, so they thought this was the best. This is the best chance here. So, John, turning to you here, is there any path to victory for Kunitskaya? And more importantly, I guess, does Cyborg merit the $9,700 price tag?
Well, I don't see any path to victory, but you know, I think we're at the point where that's pretty much what we're going to say in every Cyborg fight until somebody beats her. Her most recent fight against Holly Holm, you know, it wasn't that dominant quick finish that we've become so used to with her. But the fact she outpointed her rather easily for the course of 25 minutes and her cardio held up the entire way was as impressive as a quick finish, but it certainly showed that, you know, she has another way of winning a fight. And we talk about this all the time, you know, the odds, you know, the Vegas odds you just mentioned, you know, north of, you know, minus 1600. That's, you know, Ronda Rousey territory when Ronda was, you know, at her best and most dominant.
Slamming Triple H into tables.
Yes, which is also entertaining, but
yes, entertaining.
You know, no Vegas odds on that one. But look, we all know the risk of putting somebody with that high salary in your lineup. If God forbid something goes wrong, and you know, Cyborg takes a wrong step and her knee explodes, or she gets caught with a one shot or whatever, you know, you're essentially sunk because you can't make up the difference. Mm-hmm. But she's facing an opponent, like you said, Yana Kunitskaya, who is, you know, an Invicta champion, and, you know, no disrespect to Invicta, but, you know, that doesn't mean a whole lot. Just because she's an Invicta champion doesn't necessarily mean she's going to be able to come in and, you know, and compete with Cyborg. And as I mentioned in our article, you know, the one common opponent they have with each other is Tania Evinger. And Kunitskaya actually fought Evinger twice. She beat her the first time, but it was overruled by the athletic commission in Missouri because it was essentially a mistake by the referee. And they fought again in March of last year, just about a year ago, and Evinger beat her via submission. So to give you an idea, you know, obviously this isn't the be-all, end-all, but Evinger, you know, in their one, you know, legitimate fight, beat Kunitskaya via submission. Cyborg fought Evinger in July, so not that long ago, you know,
for the inaugural title.
Yep. And the only reason Tania Evinger lasted until 156 of the third round is because she has superhuman toughness. She's one of the toughest women walking the planet. And Cyborg beat her from pillar to post for, you know, the better part of 18 minutes. And, you know, the average, not just woman, but the average MMA competitor would have given up, you know, a long, long time before that. And look, there's no legitimate reason to believe that Kunitskaya is going to win this fight. Honestly, there's no reason that I see to believe that she's really going to be competitive. Her background isn't striking. 7 of her 10 wins are via knockout, but do you really think somebody with such relatively limited experience, 14 professional fights, is going to be able to handle Chris Cyborg in anything, let alone a kickboxing match when that's her strength? So, you know, look, it's a risk when you put that kind of money into one fighter. And what we always said about Ronda Rousey was Ronda was a submission fighter. So even though she got a couple quick knockouts when she threw Sarah McMahon on her head and all that, it's harder to predict someone getting a submission than it is to predict somebody getting a knockout. You know, you have more confidence, you know, in the knockout coming true than the submission. So, you know, it's a risky play always. You know, there's no way around it. But, you know, if any high-level fighter is worthy of that kind of salary, you would certainly think Cyborg is the one. And as always, we tell you to hedge your bets, make multiple lineups. But, you know, I think we're both on the same page as far as her being, you know, a good play, even with the, you know, high salary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Cyborg, if it's a cash game, I think that she's going to get a knockout within two rounds. I'm pretty confident in that. I think she's going to walk her down and eventually, you know, beat her into a point where the referee stops the fight. But the thing is depending on how many strikes she lands leading up to that, whether she gets a knockdown or not, whether she gets a takedown, you know, she could come in there and throw 15 significant strikes, get the knockout, but be right around 100 DraftKings points. And we've seen from the last couple cards, like Jessica Andrade last weekend, highest DraftKings score of the year, even though it was, I believe it was a decision, but she threw around takedown after takedown, a ton of ground strikes, racked up a ton of fantasy points. The second highest DraftKings score of the year was Valentina Shevchenko in that horrible Mario Yamasaki reffing disaster where Yamasaki should have stopped the fight but let the opponent continue to take a beatdown. So the highest DraftKings scores, the ones that would actually quote-unquote hit value at salaries over 9,500, aren't necessarily this style. So Cyborg, I'm predicting, you know, she's a pretty safe bet for 105 to 115 fantasy points. But what she's doing, you do with using her, is you're pretty much going to get a max of three betting favorites in. You have to have six fighters in the lineup. You're going to take some underdogs. And these betting favorites aren't going to be able to be super huge betting favorites because, I mean, we're going to talk about this later on, but there are, what, I count four more fighters that are minus 300 or more, and they're in the range of anywhere from like 8,900 to 9,300. And I'd almost rather take two of those than one Cyborg and get some more safety there, especially in cash games. Now, if you're in a GPP and you want to use Cyborg, one other favorite, and four more heavy underdogs, that could be one strategy to potentially taking down that 16,000 person tournament here. But overall, I mean, I have a tough time doing it because, like you said, you're putting all your eggs in one basket. And although I'm very confident in the knockout, the ceiling has to be, I mean, not many fighters are going to have a higher ceiling than Cyborg, but you really got to be counting on 130 to 140 points if you're going to hit that. And that's not a lock with a quick knockout. So that's the one concern that I have there.
No, you bring up a good point, but I mean, in that case, essentially, you know, you're betting on, if that's the way you look at it, you're betting on really how much damage can Kunitskaya take, really? Mm-hmm. You know, if Cyborg lands a couple of those early punches, you know, is she going to fold? You know, because you look at, you know, last week, you bring up a good point, the Jessica Andrade's Tisha Torres fight. You know, Torres hung around, you know, and lasted till the bell, but it was a fight that Andrade controlled and dominated the whole way. So, you know, we certainly, neither of us expect Cyborg to rack up, you know, a ton of takedowns and have that kind of fight.
Because she shouldn't have to.
It's a little, no. And it's a little hard, and it's, like I said, it's difficult. You know, Kunitskaya has never been knocked out in her pro career, but again, that means nothing because she's never fought a woman who punches half as hard as Cyborg does. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because she's never been knocked out doesn't, you know, really mean anything in regards to how long she's going to be able to last on Saturday. Mm-hmm. So you bring up a good point. And, you know, there's some luck involved in that because you're going to get more, you know, assuming Cyborg, you know, is dominant from the opening bell onward, you know, the amount of fantasy points you're going to rack up at that point is entirely dependent on how much damage Kunitskaya can take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just for perspective, you know, against Evinger, Cyborg landed 74 significant strikes. I don't see necessarily a knockdown in there before the win. So, I mean, if you're going strikes alone, it's tough to rack that up, and I definitely know where you're coming from there. There are situations, of course. So, I mean, bringing it full circle, there are certainly situations in where using Cyborg would be a good strategy depending on the overall goal for your lineup. But I think the optimal lineup, or quote-unquote the perfect lineup you hear referred to, might not have Cyborg in. But if you do want to go with Cyborg, we'll hopefully give you some other build-around options here. But that analysis is pretty straightforward, John. So let's move on to the co-main event, where we have a featherweight matchup between Frankie Edgar and Brian Ortega. Of course, this was originally supposed to be the rescheduled matchup between Frankie Edgar and Max Holloway. Edgar dropped out of the Holloway-Edgar first fight due to injury. Holloway ended up beating Jose Aldo again. Now it's Holloway dropping out. And instead of waiting and seeing, Frankie Edgar's taking a massive, massive risk and fighting Brian Ortega, staying on the card. Now, where Holloway would have been a big favorite in the matchup then, now Edgar's a big favorite, or a modest favorite. He's 8,700 on DraftKings compared to Ortega's 7,500. He's a minus 185 Vegas favorite, Ortega plus 160. The Vegas bookmakers don't necessarily like this one to finish. They expected to see the final bell. It is only three rounds, so something to keep in mind here. But over these three rounds, keeping that in mind, John, how do you see this one playing out?
I think pretty much all the numbers you just ran off on this one are pretty much in line in what they should be. It could very well happen again, but no big secret. I was going to pick Holloway over Edgar, and I'm at the point where Holloway has done enough and shown enough that I'm probably going to pick him over anybody in the division until somebody beats him.
Unless they do a super fight. There could be some super fight ones where it would get close. And that's always that's a different area here, you know, hypothetical.
But you're right. This is a risk for Frankie Edgar. He's facing a fighter who is nearly 10 years younger than he is. And, he's facing an opponent in Ortega who has one elite skill. And if I'm taking Frankie Edgar, and I am, I'm picking him to win, but Ortega's submission game, he is, you know, when you're looking for a reason, you know, to pick against a fighter, you look at somebody who has, you know, that one elite skill. For example, if someone's fighting Khabib Nurmagomedov, you know, Khabib's, you know, wrestling is reason enough to be terrified about whoever he's fighting. Brian Ortega has the legitimate black belt on the ground. He is an exceptional ground specialist. At 27 years old, just turned 27 last week, is probably one of the, you know, five or six or seven best ground fighters in the whole company, which is, you know, saying something for a fighter so young. But the thing I worry about with Ortega, who is undefeated for his professional career, 13-0, won no contest, is he's had fights, numerous ones, actually. Diego Branda out of the Clay Guida fight. He's had fights where he's essentially looked terrible for the better part of two rounds, and then in the third round, picked up the pace and, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, stole victories. You know, he was on his way to losing on the judges' scorecards and figured out a way to win. Now, that's not going to fly when you face a guy like Frankie Edgar. If you're not ready to fight from the opening bell onward against, you know, a tough, durable veteran like Edgar, whose, you know, cardio is always terrific, you're going to lose.
Mm-hmm. Edgar has never been knocked out or submitted in a fight his entire career. People might overlook that when setting these lineups, but if you're taking Ortega, you're counting on a submission probably, and the fact that it's never been done makes me really hesitant to touch either in this fight, really.
Frankie Edgar has been in 28 professional fights, and not only has he been in 28 professional fights, for the last, you know, decade, give or take, he's been fighting the best. You know, we don't have to run off the guys he's fought. Chad Mendes, Jose Aldo, Jeremy Stephens, Zaire Rodriguez, Uriah Faber, Charles Oliveira, Benson Henderson twice, Gray Maynard, BJ Penn. It goes on and on and on. Yeah, the best in the world for, you know, the better part of a decade. So, you know, Frankie is not going to beat himself. I agree with, the idea that this will probably see the judges' scorecards. Both men have proven to be durable. Ortega has proven that he can take a bunch of punishment and hang around, because he's been beaten up pretty good in those fights where he ended up, you know, stealing victories in the third round. But I like, especially like you mentioned, which was a good point, this is a three-round fight, and I think Frankie's just going to outpace him. I think he moves better on the feet. Ortega's striking is still, his striking is never going to get to the level of his grappling. But, Frankie is the more fluid striker. I just think he's the better all-around fighter. Now, if Ortega is able to get him in the mat, Ortega's ground game is so good that he can beat any man in the world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that certainly wouldn't be a shock if he's able to get him there. But based on the bodies of work, you know, I think Frankie deserves the benefit of the doubt here.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, I'm picking Frankie Edgar to win as well. I don't think you can really pick against them, given both fighters' resume leading up to this point. Now, the question for me is, Frankie Edgar's 8,700. That's quite a bit for someone who's only about a minus 180 favorite. In his UFC career, 2.59 takedowns per 15 minutes, 3.55 significant strikes landed per minute. If this does see the final bell, as we expect, and he stays in line with his career averages, he's not going to hit value at 8,700. So really, overall, I'm fading this fight in any of my lineups. I don't think I'm going to get a piece of either of these guys. If it were five rounds and Edgar had a little bit more time to rack up fantasy points, I think it'd be a different answer for me, and I'd be a little more attracted to Edgar. But overall, I'm going to fade this because, A, I don't think Edgar can hit value in a three-round fight, and B, I don't think Ortega can finish Edgar just because it's never been done before. And of course, wild things happen in MMA more than any other sport, arguably. But I just don't see enough appeal from either guy to really put much stake in them on DraftKings.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, you know, if you do that, you're essentially, if you're taking it, you're kind of, you know, essentially betting on his, you know, his body of work, really. And just that you know what you're going to get from him. It's a good point because I think there are enough names on this. You know, there have been some cards lately that feature a ton of guys or women that, you know, we don't know a ton about. The next fight is a perfect example of that. The next fight we're going to talk about. But so if you want to put Edgar in your lineup, you know, you're going based upon the fact that, you know, he has such a body of work and, you know, everybody knows a lot about him and you know what we're going to get from him every time in and out. But you're right. You know, it's one of those situations where 8,700 to me for Edgar, it's not an insane salary. I don't think it's high enough to the point where you would look at that number and say, oh, forget it, I'm never using him. But I certainly agree with you in the sense that there's a distinct possibility that at that price, he doesn't return value, even if we both think he's going to win, you know, fairly easily.
Yeah, I'm predicting about 75 to 85 fantasy points over the course of three rounds. I'm not quite sure that's going to move the needle in a lineup here. But all right, enough about these guys. We kind of got the story there. Time to move on to an interesting welterweight belt that found its way onto the pay-per-view. I think it's a good card from top to bottom, so I was a little bit surprised. But I think the way the UFC wants to market and bring up Sean O'Malley after the whole Dana White Tuesday Night Contender thing, if you remember that crazy Snoop Dogg call, I linked it in the article in case anyone's curious. But so Sean O'Malley, undefeated in his professional year, won his UFC debut against Tarion Ware. Now they're going to bring him Andre Sukumthath. I hope I said that right. The UFC press website, didn't normally they have a little audio recorder, didn't quite have it. So I'm gonna call him.
You were close enough.
I'm sorry, what was that? Close enough?
You were close enough, yeah.
Okay,
I
awesome.
I called him Andre for the article. It was
exactly
easier.
Yeah, I'm going to do the same thing, and I'm sure Anik and Rogan and those guys are going to stick to Andre as well. Sukumthath is how it looks, at least. So I know he's fought three times in 2017, so I fully acknowledge I should know this, but they've all been on pretty low prelims here, and now he gets a definite upgrade in exposure. And the two of them, it's really looking like a pick'em. Sukumthath, 8,200. I'm just going to say Andre from now on. Andre's 8,200. O'Malley, 8,000. Andre, a minus 135 betting favorite. O'Malley, plus 115. So that's hardly a difference. I mean, that's almost a pick'em. Odds to finish are kind of right on that line, minus 150. So Vegas likes it to go to finish a decent amount more than decision, but certainly wouldn't be surprising in a decision here. But both of these guys, at least O'Malley, is impressed with volume so far. Who you like in this one, John?
I picked O'Malley, but it's one of those sites where this is one that I think is just, if you can, best to avoid at all costs. Only because of, they just gave a ton of information on Edgar. It's a real lack of information here both ways. The UFC is definitely trying to, and they've been doing this a lot lately, even on big cards, they seem to be mixing in, you know, a fight or two with lesser known fighters in hopes that they can, you know, promote, you know, some young fighters. I'm a little surprised that whether it's O'Malley here or, you know, Mackenzie Dern, who we'll talk about a little bit later, I'm a little surprised that, for example, they didn't have them do open workouts or something like that, only because, you know, it helps, you know, boost their mainstream appeal. But, you know, these are two guys who have limited exposure in the UFC. They fought, you know, subpar competition in what we have, you know, seen of them. So, O'Malley would, you know, Sukumthath is a striker. O'Malley's, you know, best path to victory, you know, would appear to be his wrestling, but O'Malley's a little bigger, a couple inches taller, a couple inch reach advantage. So, you know, this is one of those fights where I liked what I saw from O'Malley in his first fight, but, you know, we haven't seen enough from either guy to really, you know, say with conviction, you know, really a good prediction for you. So, and I think, you know, when it's close, you know, the payoff difference between the two, you know, is very slim given the DraftKings salaries. But, you know, O'Malley as the underdog and the guy with the lower salary, you know, will give you a slightly better payoff. So, you know, when that's the, when you don't know who to pick, you know, you always go with the underdog only because the payoff's bigger. But,
exactly.
You know, there's enough fighters on this card who are well known that I think you can probably safely get away with not putting one of these guys in your lineup.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, at the same time, you could say that taking a flyer on one of these guys, banking on lower ownership, could help you in a GPP. But for the most part, John, I'm with you. The body of work just isn't there to make a really solid analysis on this. You mentioned O'Malley a little bit taller and longer than Andre, but the thing for me is, even when I saw him on the Tuesday Night Contender Series, this probably isn't the right word, given that he's a professional fighter in better shape than I ever will be, but just a little bit lanky, whereas Andre looks more, he's a little more compact and solid. Now, I'm basing this entirely.
Yeah, O'Malley's definitely slight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm basing
this. O'Malley's definitely slight.
Yeah, exactly. So I base this maybe a little bit too much on just the eye test from the limited, you know, quote-unquote eye test. It's combine week here in the office, NFL combine week, so all those terms getting thrown around here. But the eye test tells me that maybe that Andre's just like a little more solid. And then there's the fact that he has three UFC fights, and O'Malley just has the one UFC fight in the Tuesday Night Contenders. So, you know, and Andre did lose two of his first three fights, but he kind of came back with a pretty solid TKO victory over Luke Sanders in his last bout. So I guess if you had asked me straight up with no DraftKings implications, who's going to win straight up, I guess I'd go Andre. But I think O'Malley might have a little bit more fantasy appeal because, again, it's only one fight, but he landed over 8 significant strikes per minute in that debut against Tarion Ware. And if he can get a knockdown or two mixed in there, that's going to be very, very good for O'Malley as far as racking up fantasy points. If you do get the knockout, then you get a big payout at 8,000, and that's not too bad. And the thing for me is, with 6 fighters, you get $8,333 per fighter on average, and both of these guys are under average. So putting either of these guys in your lineup will give you a little bit of extra money to work with, and I think they did that on purpose to try to get some more exposure to these guys in the contest. I'm sure that's part of the DraftKings algorithm, you know, trying to predict ownership percentage when setting salaries, and then, you know, that's why you see Cyborg so high. So I guess we're split on this one, but overall, I know I promise we'll get to some values and some recommendations later, because we've seemed to be avoiding most of the main card, which normally isn't the case. But in this case, I'd be hesitant to get too heavy on this one, John, here. But let's keep things moving here with a shift to a heavyweight matchup. We've got some recognizable names in here, some recognizable names that have kind of hit rough patches of lately, at least to put it lightly. Stefan Struve is 8,800 going up against Andrei Arlovski, 7,400. Struve minus 225, Arlovski plus 185. We got good odds to finish here, minus 260. So Vegas thinks we're going to have a knockout here. You know, reading your preview, John, you're not real high on either of these guys, but is there any fantasy implication or benefit you can draw from this fight?
I mean, you're right. I don't think highly of either at this point. I think they're both, you know, essentially done. You know, Arlovski, if he's done, it's because of his age. You know, he's older and he's been around forever. And, you know, at 39 years old, it's just about time. He defeated Junior Albini via decision in November, but prior to that, he lost 5 fights in a row. And I was actually kind of shocked UFC didn't release him after that. But, they decide to give him another chance. And, you know, if you think Arlovski is a value play, then you're banking on the fact that he somehow would be able to rack up, you know, a knockout, because even, you know, at age 39, he essentially, all he does is he just still throws power shots. Like he's in his, you know, like he was in his heyday, you know, early 30s. And his footwork is non-existent. He doesn't have, you know, the foot speed or hand speed to get into position to land the strikes like he used to. You know, he's getting hit far too much, obviously, than he ever did before. But, you know, the guy, Stefan Struve, who he's facing, another guy who, you know, is not exactly, you know, a picture of consistency. He's struggled, you know, throughout his career. You know, a lot of that has been health-related. But, you know, for a guy who, I believe is the tallest fighter in UFC history. I mean, north of 7 feet tall.
You don't see many 7-footers grace the octagon, that is for sure.
No, you don't. But he still has absolutely no idea how to fight properly. You know, his, you know,
how to use it to his advantage.
No clue. no idea. You know, he should be standing far away and, you know, throwing, you know, a ton of kicks and keeping his opponent at distance and, you know, using that, you know, that height and that leg reach,
think,
you know,
Jones
to his
and
advantage.
Gustafson. Yeah, think Jones and Gustafson, how they use it. It's a division smaller and it's not quite as pronounced as it is with Stroop, but that's the idea that he's going for.
Yeah, it is. You know, he has a 7-inch reach advantage on Arlovski. And the weird part thing about Struve is he'll do it for short periods of time. Like, he'll do it for, like, a round, and then he, like, won't do it for, like, three fights in a row. The whole thing is very, very weird. And, you know, he has a ton of submissions in his career. He has 17 submission wins in his career, you know. And when you're as long and as tall as he is and you have limbs, you know, the size – you know, the guy's nickname is the skyscraper. You know, when your limbs are that long, it leads to, you know, an increased, you know, advantage on the mat as well as the striking. But when you're that tall, everything you do should be based upon your ability to keep your opponent away from you and you be able to land. You know, it's the main reason that Alexander Gustafsson gave John Jones his biggest challenge of his career, because for the first time ever, Jones was facing a fighter that he couldn't beat with his his reach and his land, because Gustafsson is built, you know, very similarly, and it ended up leading, you know, to one of the greatest fights of all time. So, you know, I don't like either man. I think Arlovski is more finished than Struve is, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. But I guess by definition, I'm picking Struve to win. But it's at the point where there's absolutely no reason to have any confidence in either guy, because, you know, Arlovski in particular, I'm almost 100% convinced is finished. Struve is maybe like, I don't know, 70% done. Put it this way, Struve in the right matchup, maybe I would pick him to win, you know, probably not against any top 10 guys, but, you know, there are some guys maybe I think he would be able to beat. Anybody in the division with a pulse, essentially, I would pick over Arlovski at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you mean. This is very, very, it's a tough one for me, because 8,800, yeah, you know, I'm going to pick Struve for this fight, and I think most of us will, but this is another one where 8,800, I don't feel great enough about the man that I'm spending that much in salary on to do this. So, I mean, with Struve, he only fought once in 2017. That was a TKO loss to Alexander Volkov, and then Arlovski, the last time he fought, he finally snapped a 5-fight losing streak and picked up a decision win over Junior Albini. And there's not a lot of encouraging things there. I mean, Arlovski at 39 years old, at 7,400, he could maybe get a knockout. And I think that's an okay GPP flyer, because I don't think people are going to be really heavily owned on him. His ownership percentage won't be that high. And that could separate you from the rest of the field, but I'm limiting this one to GPPs. I'm probably staying away from this fight in cash. You know, I keep teasing, we're going to get to some of the favorites later on, but there are better fighters than Struve, even though I'm going to pick him in this fight. But let's go ahead and move on to the main pay-per-view card opener. We've got a women's strawweight belt with the return of Kat Zingano. She's going up against Ketlin Vieira. Zingano 7,900, Vieira 8,300. Plus 130 for Zingano, minus 150 for Vieira. Plus 145 odds to finish here. It's been a layoff for Zingano, but when she started out, she was fighting some of the best in the division. John, how quickly do you think she can get it back?
We're going to find out, because I think this is essentially last call for Kat. She's going to be 36 years old in July. She hasn't fought in about a year and a half. July 2016 was her last fight. Mm-hmm. And remember, you know, this is, you know, essentially one of the pioneers of women's MMA. You know, Zingano has wins over Misha Tate. She has a win over current UFC women's bantamweight champion Amanda Nunes. She has a win over Raquel Pennington, who is, you know, rumored to be the next challenger for Nunes. That's not a good fight, but we'll talk about that another day. So it's really essentially how much confidence do you have in Zingano's ability to bounce back after such a long time on the sidelines? And, you know, Kat has shown enough over the course of her career that, you know, I kind of think she deserves the benefit of the doubt. Now, she's facing an opponent in Ketlin Vieira who, much younger, only 26, undefeated as a professional. So obviously undefeated in the UFC, 3-0. You know, her wins, first two wins, decision wins over Kelly Fashels and Ashley Evans-Smith were both via decisions, and there wasn't a whole lot going on in either fight. But her win over Sarah McMahon, who has fallen apart in September, was certainly the best performance of her career. She finished the fight with an arm triangle choke, and it was really impressive. You know, a young fighter, Nova Uniao product, who is, you know, consistently making progress. Kat is going to have, even though she's given up a couple inches in height, she's going to have a power advantage. Kat's extremely strong for the division, always has been. So, you know, her plan, I think, is going to be to try and out-muscle Vieira. Vieira herself has proven to be a good wrestler and good on the ground. So, you know, that might not be, you know, the clearest path to victory for Kat. But, you know, it's kind of one of those things where I'm inclined, like, there's no logical reason to give Arlovsky one last chance. You know, I think there's still hope for Kat. Now, I don't think she's going to beat Amanda Nunes again or anything like that. But I think she has enough left in the tank that it's worth, I'm picking her out right, but I think it's worth giving her a look here as both an underdog on the DK salaries at 7,900, which is, you know, a pretty good price, and plus 130 in Vegas odds. I think that's also a pretty good price because she's really facing a fighter in Vieira who we have little information on. Her win over Sarah McMahon was impressive, but then we saw Sarah McMahon, you know, it's fighters who are going backwards. You know, she hasn't really defeated anybody who, you know, you would call a top fighter. So we're going to find out really, it's really how much do you think the time off has infected Zingano, and it affects everybody differently. Regardless of what Dominic Cruz says, Octagon Rust is real. It does exist. We see it all the time. And, you know, I think we're going to find out really quick if Kat, you know, what she did with her time off, because if she doesn't win this fight, you know, I think we're going to have a really hard time picking her against any legitimate fighter going forward. And if she no-shows completely, considering all the time she took off, I guess it's not out of the realm of possibility that she could step away. You know, she's talked about it before. There have been whispers of it. So if she goes in and she gets absolutely obliterated by Vieira, you know, I guess it's possible she retires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, this is a tough one, John, because I don't like, I know that the Ring Rust, we talk about that all the time, it exists, and this is one where if you looked at just the names, you'd be like, oh, Zingano, but if you look at the blind resume of late, the measurements and the stats, and block the names out, you understand why Vieira is a favorite, and that's probably why I'm going to take her, because like I said, there's the long layoff. Vieira is much younger and up and coming as opposed to Zingano on the late end of her career. And also Vieira's, you know, has the advantage in terms of both height and reach, and she's on a winning streak. So those things added together, looking not at the names, I very much understand where you're coming from. And Zingano at 7,900, why the heck not? You know, that throws you another $400 or $500 to put towards one of these favorites. And that could be the more logical DraftKings play because they are close enough. But again, if you take the names out, I'm taking the other side of this one. But again, this isn't the pick that I'm going to run to the top of the mountains and shoot out super confidently. I'll be the first to admit that. But I think I'm going to go with the more active younger fighter with the momentum of late in this bout at least. But all right. That's going to wrap things up for our main card here pretty much. There's a few more items that we want to get to. You alluded to it earlier. First of all, Mackenzie Dern, John, she's got a pretty big social media following. I think she's going to be very marketable when she comes and starts getting regular UFC fights. And the UFC has basically set her up like they do with a lot of prospects sometimes. They're trying to build her up here and hopefully get her a win because, I mean, hey, Vegas says that that she's a minus 425 favorite, which is pretty wild here. She's going up against Ashley Yoder, who's 7,200. Mackenzie Dern's 9,000. So she's the second biggest Vegas favorite on the card. But when you look in terms of salary, she only has the fourth biggest salary. So if you like to look at it mathematically that way, there could be some, there could be potential there, but at $9,000, is she someone that you'd throw into your DraftKings lineup? I mean, what do we really know about her so far?
Well, we know she's a former world jiu-jitsu champion, which is, you know, no joke for, you know, a girl who will turn 25 years old next month. But you're right. She has extremely limited experience in MMA. She has 5 career professional fights. And, you know, to be honest, they've been against, you know, basically nobody. So you're right in the sense that the UFC is trying to build her up. They learned their lesson for what they did with Sage Northcutt and what they did with Paige VanZant in, you know, pushing marketable young fighters too quickly. And Dern, put it this way, the UFC brass and Dana White and Sean Shelby and everybody else will be crying themselves to sleep on Saturday night if Dern loses this fight. Because she is extremely marketable for, you know, numerous obvious reasons. And she is being set up to win. Now, that's a little concerning because you have a young woman who, as great as she is on the ground and as good a grappler as she is, her experience in the sport as a whole is, you know, extremely, extremely limited. Now, you know, I don't think either of us think that, you know, Ashley Yoder, who she's facing, you know, and has lost back-to-back fights in her only 2 UFC appearances, is all that big of a threat to her. But if you're facing, you know, in Dern's case, if you have limited experience and you don't fully know what you're doing in there, you make rookie mistakes. And if you do that, anybody can beat you. Yeah. So, it's probably, Dern certainly has potential. She's certainly marketable. The UFC is, they'll never admit it, but they're 100,000,000% hoping that she wins. But until we get a better handle on her true potential as a mixed martial artist, we know her true potential as a jiu-jitsu specialist. You know, she's a former world champion, but that's not what this is. You have to be able to do a bunch of different things in order to succeed in this sport. And we have very little evidence that, you know, she very well could be able to do it all, but we have very, very little evidence at this point that she is, and that makes for her a risky play, especially given how substantial of a favorite she is.
Yeah, the big question mark with Dern is going to be her striking, because she's 5-0, never doesn't have a KO or a TKO victory, but looking at the other side of that, Ashley Yoder is only 5-3. She also does not have a TKO victory, and 4 of those 5 wins were by submission. If there's anything that I would say, you know, unless there's a rookie mistake in here, I don't think Mackenzie Dern, world jiu-jitsu champion at this age, is going to get submitted necessarily. Now, she would have to make a rookie mistake. That's always possible. But, you know, if the concern is striking because there's not enough body of work to evaluate it, and that's not where she's competed in the past, you know, it's not like it's some kickboxer coming in that's been highly touted. But if the concern is striking, you look at the opponent who doesn't have, you know, a whole lot of a striking repertoire, and that's why I, you know, that's why overall I think she's a pretty safe bet at 9,000. So, she's one of the big favorites in there. I'm sure you guys, we can wrap up our talk on her because you guys are going to hear plenty about Mackenzie Dern over the next couple of years, especially if she picks up a couple of wins. Trust me, guys, if you don't know her already, just look at her Instagram. You'll see what we're talking about.
She will.
But she's going to be able to back some of that up with skill, I hope, given the pedigree to date. So Dern's a minus 425 favorite. Beneil Dariush is a minus 380 favorite. Zach Otto is a minus 300 favorite. Jordan Johnson, who's opening up the entire card, is a minus 330 favorite. That leaves, if you count Cyborg, at least 5 favorites of minus 300 or more. Are you worried about any of those guys, John?
I don't know if I would say worried. I'm not worried about Beneil Dariush because he's really good and he's really underrated. The Mike Pyle Zach Otto fight is the one I wouldn't be necessarily worried about Otto, but Mike Pyle, if you didn't hear, announced a couple days ago on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani that this will be his retirement fight. And, you know, Mike Pyle, for, you know, hardcore MMA fans, you know, I've known Mike Pyle for a while, one of the true gentlemen and veterans of the sport, you know, one of the best mullets you'll ever see in your life. A really just a good guy, a really good, tough, durable fighter. You know, been fighting forever, made his professional debut back in 1999 with a loss to Rampage Jackson, as scary as that is, you know, going on, you know, 19 years ago. So, you know, I think we both would agree that, you know, Otto, especially at this point in his career, is a better fighter. But, you know, when guys, you know, are looking, you know, down the barrel of the gun and, you know, it's, you know, time to step away, maybe they get an extra, you know, an extra boost from that. And maybe, you know, Mike Pyle knows he's walking and, you know, leaves it all in the octagon and, you know, pulls out some crazy finish. So, you know, you look at those kind of things. But I think, you know, the majority of, you know, the people you just listed are our favorites for a reason, and, you know, all pretty safe plays. But the fact Pyle at, you know, age 42 is finally ready to step aside, you know, maybe he gets an extra boost from knowing it's going to be his last time fighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you on Dariush, by the way, too. I've been impressed with what he's been able to do of late. He is the second most expensive fighter at 9,200, but 9,200 isn't outrageous. And I think that seems like a good starting building block for these lineups here. You know, Dariush had a disappointing fantasy day against Edson Barbosa, but you can't really blame him for that. You know, has win over James Vick in 2016, scored 133 fantasy points in that outing, and I think we both know what to think of that. I think Dariush should be able to get it done and is a pretty strong bet to get you your 100 fantasy points and hit value there. But these guys are all high-priced. We talked about Cyborg at 9,700, John. It leaves you to look at the rest of the card and wonder, where can you find value on this card to fit in some of these favorites?
The one that stands out to me, you know, right off the top is Brian Caraway at 7,700. That's an awful low number, as far, especially considering he's facing a fighter in Cody Stamann who, you know, while certainly impressive, you know, doesn't have anywhere near, you know, the pedigree of Caraway. You know, Caraway hasn't fought, you know, since May of 2016, so he's looking at, you know, upwards of 2 years on the sidelines, and that's always, you know, better known as the boyfriend of Misha Tate, that's always a concern all the time on the sideline. But 4-1 his last five fights, you know, has decisions, Aljamain Sterling his last time out, 17 career wins by submission for Caraway, which is obviously a massive number. And he's facing an opponent in Cody Stamann who is more of a striker, you know, probably a bit more powerful, certainly hasn't faced, you know, the caliber of opponents in his career that Caraway has. But when I first saw the fight announced, you know, if I was looking at a blind at, and I wanted to guess, you know, the odds and you know, the salaries, I figured Stamann probably would have been a slight favorite, you know, maybe minus, you know, 115, you know, something like that in that area. Minus 160 is, you know, a massive, massive line for a guy who has, you know, relatively little experience to get high-level opponents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 8,500 also seems like a very high price. I would have said something like maybe, you know, 81 a piece, you know, somewhere in that area. So Caraway is perennially underrated, you know, in a division that has a lot of really, really good fighters. The bantamweight division is very deep. As guys get older, Caraway's 33, you know, they tend to fade a bit, but, and he's obviously been forgotten about because, you know, he's been away for, you know, the better part of 2 years. But I think Caraway not only has a chance to return value as, you know, a DK underdog and a Vegas underdog, I think he stands a pretty good chance of winning outright. He's obviously given up a lot of power, but, you know, with his, you know, age and experience and all the high-level opponents that he's faced over the years, I think he stands a pretty good chance of, you know, countering everything that Stamann throws at him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you, John. You make a very good case for Caraway, and I definitely overlooked that one a little bit when trying to identify value, you know, and that might get overlooked being on one of the early prelims, but definitely don't discount those fights when putting together your lineups. I can't stress that enough. When I was looking for value, you know, I make this mistake sometimes on DraftKings, I'll be the first to admit, where I look more at the opponent than the actual fighter themselves. And if there's an opponent that I don't have a ton of confidence in, or he's been on a streak of getting knocked out, I'll tend to pick his opponent or that fighter in my lineup. And in this case, I've never thought crazy highly of CB Dalloway overall as a fighter, but at 7,800 matched up against Hector Lombard, I would think that that seems like a value play to me, because Dalloway's 6 years younger, has a 5-inch height and reach advantage. Now, on the downside, CB Dalloway hasn't gotten a stoppage since 2014. But you look at Hector Lombard's log there. He hasn't gotten a stoppage since 2013. And Lombard has been knocked out three times in his last four fights. I've seen a couple of those Hector Lombard fights to date. Not incredibly impressed. You know, he's 40 years old, so he could be nearing the end of the line here. And maybe I'm just underestimating Lombard, but I think at 7,800, I'm going to go ahead and throw Dalloway in a handful or most of DraftKings lineups. I noticed you picked Lombard in the article, John. Am I nuts here?
No, you're not. The thing with Lombard is essentially a light version of Yoel Romero, although Yoel's kind of figured this out in the sense that he's going to look like a world leader for, you know, 2.5, 3, 3.5 minutes, something like that. And then after that, he's, you know, essentially useless. And Lombard, you know,
so much muscle.
Yeah. Yeah. And he, you know, so much muscle, you know, takes all the energy to carry all, you know, that extra weight and that muscle mass around. And if, you know, I don't think there's any doubt. If you know, you said, tell me right now, this fight was going to end in the first round, I would certainly tell you that Lombard probably is going to win. But, you know, CB Dalloway has been around a long time. If this fight gets out of the first round, he's going to have a significant advantage. And, you know, Dalloway has fought just once since December 2015. I believe he had that weird elevator accident where it ended up messing up his back, and he was sidelined, you know, for quite a long time. This whole thing was really strange. He ended up on the sideline for, you know, the better part of a year and a half. So, but again, I pick Lombard to win, if only because I think he stands a pretty good chance of finishing Dalloway with that first flurry, which is essentially what, you know, we say about Yoel Romero, what we said about Yoel Romero all the time. You know, if he's able to finish him in the first couple minutes, he's arguably the most dangerous fighter in the world. If the fight gets past that point, he's in massive trouble. But you're right, as an underdog, Dalloway is a good play because with everything Lombard's going through, there's certainly no guarantee that he's going to be able to get a stoppage early. And if he doesn't, the momentum and the value certainly slips to Dalloway. And given his lower salary, that makes him attractive.
Right on, John. I very much appreciate the reassurance there. So I know we started out by advising fading a few of these fights, but hopefully we brought things full circle, gave you the favorites we like, and the value plays that we like here. That's going to wrap things up for us today, though. John, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a while. I miss it. Look forward to doing more of these here as we continue to move forward. Just some bookkeeping here. Very much, of course, we appreciate you listening. If you can take a sec to leave us a rating and review, that's appreciated even more. You can follow John on Twitter at JonLitterine. You can follow me, Jake, on Twitter at JakeSki52. John, looking forward to coming back and maybe breaking down some of this one and looking ahead to UFC 223, which is Khabib Nurmagomedov against Tony Ferguson. Fingers crossed, man, that this fight actually happens, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Thanks again for joining, John, and good luck with your lineups.
All right, thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
All right, cheers.